Montgomery, and this is For the Record program number 284, titled Hearken Unto Me, Business as Usual for the Bush Family. The title is a pun on Harken Energy, spelled H-A-R-K-E-N. That's one of the many Bush family oil. Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is For the Record program number 306, a two-part series titled Another Look at Global Fascism. This is being recorded on May 16th of the year 2001. We're going to begin by taking a look at an op-ed column from the Los Angeles Times, which discusses some Arab propaganda that has been increasing in apparent in frequency and virulence as tensions in the Middle East have heightened following the breakdown of the peace process. As I've noted in the past of discussions of tensions in the Middle East, both the heritage of the Israeli far right and the heritage of much of the Palestinian national movement and other nationalist movements in the Middle East date back to the fascism of pre-World War II and World War II, and also to a certain extent post-World War II as well. Some of the discussions that we've had concerning the recent and vitally important book Dreamer of the Day, Francis Parker Yaki and the Post-War Fascist International, authored by Kevin Coogan, go into that at considerable length. There are numerous other broadcasts available from Spitfire that go into that subject. And at the end of this side and the other side, time permitting, I'm going to give several web addresses at which you can access either printed descriptions, detailed annotated descriptions of many of these broadcasts, and or real audio files of some of the programs themselves. We're going to begin, as I said, by taking a look at an op-ed column that appeared in the L.A. Times of Tuesday, May 15th of the year 2001. This is by an Israeli author and columnist named Yossi Klein Halevi, and after discussing the fear that he and his father felt looking at newsreel footage or at broadcast footage of Arab crowds prior to the 1967 war chanting their hatred of Israel and brandishing skulls and so forth, he writes, skipping down, this, by the way, the column is titled Dance of Death Overtakes the Arab World. And the column reads in part as follows, skipping down. A new hit song on Egyptian radio stations proclaims, quote, I hate Israel, unquote. State-controlled newspapers vie with each other to spread the most astonishing lies, including the medieval notion that Jews use the blood of murdered Gentile children for matzah, the theme of a popular book written by Syrian Defense Minister Mustafa Talas that is about to be turned into an Egyptian film that is being touted as the Arab response to Schindler's List. The Arab world has become obsessed with the Holocaust, and two camps have emerged. One camp, which includes the government-controlled newspapers of Syria, Lebanon, and the Palestinian Authority, argues that the Holocaust never happened. The other camp, which includes at least one government newspaper in Egypt, acknowledges that the Holocaust did happen and is grateful to Hitler for implementing it. Indeed, nowhere except in the Arab world is both Holocaust denial and admiration for the final solution as mainstream, including among intellectuals. Almost every morning I find on my computer screen another message of hate, courtesy of the Middle East Media Research Institute, a Washington-based group specializing in translations of the Arab press. MEMRI wisely refrains from attaching commentaries to its translations and allows the articles to speak for themselves. Here is a small sample of what has recently come across my screen. Ahmed Ragab, R-A-G-A-B, in his daily column in the Egyptian government-sponsored newspaper Al-Akbar of April 20th, quote, thanks to Hitler of blessed memory, who on behalf of the Palestinians revenged in advance against the most vile criminals on the face of the earth. Although we do have a complaint against him for his revenge on them, was not enough, unquote. And Hiri Manzur, columnist for the Palestinian Authority-controlled newspaper Al-Hayat al-Jadida, April 13th, quote, the figure of 6 million Jews cremated in the Nazi Auschwitz camps is a lie for propaganda, unquote. Arab heads of state repeat calumnies which, in the West, only neo-Nazis dare to publicly voice. Libyan dictator Muammar Gaddafi recently accused Israel and the CIA of infecting Libyan children with AIDS. Syrian dictator Bashar Assad, speaking in the presence of the Pope, revived the deadly accusation of deicide, claiming that the Jews, quote, tried to kill the principles of all religions with the same mentality in which they betrayed Jesus Christ, and tried to betray and kill the Prophet Muhammad, unquote. Emboldened by the unrestrained Jew hatred, Saddam Hussein ended his speech at the recent Arab summit in Amman with this prayer, quote, "God damn the Jews," unquote. This astonishing outbreak of hatred would perhaps be comprehensible had Israel annexed the West Bank and expelled its Palestinian inhabitants. In fact, the Nazi-like incitement follows Israel's unprecedented offer under former Prime Minister Ehud Barak to withdraw from practically the entire West Bank, uproot a majority of settlements, and create a Palestinian state with Jerusalem as its capital. And skipping down, armies may not yet be gathering against our borders, but the hatred can lead to only one conclusion. I recognize the signs, and I am afraid. And that again from the L.A. Times of May 15th of the year 2001. As something of a parenthetical element, if you think the price of gasoline is high now, if there's a major war in the Middle East, you watch what happens to the price of gas. Now, noting, as that column did, not only the degree of overlap between some of the arguments currently being voiced in the Arab world against Israel, and the overlap between some of that propaganda and the fascist propaganda of, well, really pre-World War II, during World War II, and post-World War II, note the following as we begin to examine global fascism. What we're going to do now is to take a look at an article from L'Espresso, researched and translated for us by Dave White, our pan-European researcher and translator, who discusses some of the pro-Iranian and pro-Islamist orientation of some explicitly fascist European publications. Once again, research and translation credit on this goes to Dave White, who got this from L'Espresso of January 11th of the year 2001. This article is titled, "Fascists Who Read," and it's authored by Peter Gomez. The article reads, "Holocaust revisionists, pro-Iranians, even Marxists. The multifaceted galaxy of the Italian extreme right is reflected in its magazines. Avanguardia, published by the Avanguardia community of Trapani, led by Leonardo Fonti, pro-Islamic, anti-Zionist, and anti-American. Contributors include Vincenzo Vinciguerra, perpetrator of the Petiano massacre. Orion," by the way, this is again a list of fascist publications and some of their orientations. "Orion defines itself as nationalist communist and is constantly anti-Zionist. Published in Milan, it reprints Voro's cartoons from Il Manifesto. Uomo Libero," the first word is U-O-M-O, Libero, capital L-I-B-E-R-O, headed by Mario Consoli, who organized a meeting canceled by police to air the Holocaust revisionism of David Irving. Contributors to Uomo Libero include Forza Nuova leaders Sergio and Marzio Gozzoli. Puro Islam, pro-Iranian, supported wholeheartedly by the conservator for the late Ayatollah Khomeini. Last summer, Puro Islam organized its first Islamic seminar. Publicandor, a news agency founded by Stefano Della Chiai. Last June in Rome, he participated in a national forum for the construction of a single unit from opposing movements," unquote. Also attending were members of Forza Nuova, Movimento Sociale Fiamma Tricolore, Fronte Nazionale Italiano, and former Ordine Nuovo member Paolo Signorelli. As we will see either later in this broadcast and or at a subsequent broadcast about the election of Silvio Berlusconi and his political coalition, which significantly overlaps Italian fascism, some of these organizations, such as the Movimento Sociale Fiamma Tricolore, are part of the victorious Berlusconi coalition in Italy. Quote, "In time," returning to the L'Espresso text, quote, "in time, the thing that seemed like an impossible bet to the usual defeatists will become a reality," unquote, writes Della Chiai. That's Stefano Della Chiai, one of the most important Italian fascist terrorists in the post-war period, and an individual discussed at great length in numerous broadcasts, including and especially RFA number 19, quote, "But for now, we have to have faith and build foundations," unquote. So again, note the positions of solidarity between some of those Italian fascist publications and elements of either Middle Eastern and or Islamic nationalism. And again, for a good discussion of some of those historical roots, listeners can examine, among other programs, RFA 22, some of the discussions that we've had with Martin A. Lee concerning his vitally important recent book, The Beast Reawakens, and above all else, some of the conversations that, again, that I've had with Kevin Coogan, the brilliant author of Dreamer of the Day, Francis Parker Yockey, and the Post-War Fascist International. And in order to just to better understand, I think, some of the links between fascist elements and Third World Liberation movements, as well as doctrinaire leftists or extreme leftists, again, I think the book Dreamer of the Day, Francis Parker Yockey and the Post-War Fascist International, published in softcover by Autonomy Media and again authored by Kevin Coogan, is about as authoritative a read on that subject as I could think of offhand, and I emphatically recommend it. It is also not an easy book to read, so don't expect a quick fireside literary experience, because you won't get it with Dreamer of the Day. What you will get is a very substantive, in-depth, hands-on education about fascism in the 20th century. There was a very interesting article that appeared in the San Francisco Chronicle about an Iraqi arms dealer who serves as a conduit of aid from the far right and explicitly fascist elements in Europe to Saddam Hussein and Iraq. This article was published in the San Francisco Chronicle of Thursday, May 3rd of the year 2001. It's by Eric Geiger of the Chronicle Foreign Service. It's headlined, "Convicted Arms Dealer Funnels Aid from Europe's Far Right to Iraq." Subtitled, Austrian German Neo-Nazi Groups Are Fans of Hussein. And it's datelined, Sanviet unter Glan, Austria. The article reads in part, "Until recently, residents of this sleepy village took little notice of a portly, middle-aged Arab businessman living inconspicuously on the edge of town with his family, assuming him to be a successful carpet dealer. But Austrian media, citing security authorities, identified Abdul Monim Jebara, J-E-B-A-R-A, 60, as a convicted Iraqi arms dealer allegedly acting as Saddam Hussein's liaison with sympathetic far-rightist groups in Europe. Quote, he calls himself a mere export and import trader, but Austrian and German security agencies see Jebara as a pivot of an alarmingly close cooperation emerging in recent months between extreme rightists in the two countries and radical Islamists," unquote, said Vienna's usually well-informed and influential news magazine, Format. From his hilltop bungalow sporting satellite dishes and surveillance cameras, Jebara allegedly is coordinating unspecified aid programs from a network of far-rightist supporters in Europe for Iraq, which is still under UN sanctions imposed in 1990 after its invasion of Kuwait. What seems to unite the European far-rightists and the Iraqis are their common anti-Semitic and anti-American sentiments. In its latest report on the rightist scene in Germany, the Agency of the Protection of the Constitution, a sort of German FBI, said, quote, the American democratic system is seen by the two groups as an expression of cultural decadence and economic imperialism, unquote. A recent debate in Austria's parliament seemed to suggest that since settling in Sanviet, near Klagenfurt in Carinthia province in the early 1990s, Jebara has enjoyed the protection of high-level politicians who were aware of his activities and background. Quote, how is it possible that a man of Jabara's caliber, who is known to have close contacts to the extreme rightist and the Iraqi Secret Service, and served part of a 6-year sentence for arms dealing, blackmail, and tax evasion in Germany, was allowed to settle in Austria, unquote, thundered Karl Ohlinger, a prominent opposition Green Party lawmaker. Austria's 15-month-old center-far-right coalition government quickly passed the buck, saying that attempts to start deportation proceedings against Jebara have always been thwarted by Carinthian authorities. Jörg Haider, founder of the far-right Freedom Party and still its driving force, is Carinthia's governor. In an interview last week, Haider insisted that provincial authorities have no power to block proceedings related to federal alien laws. Please note that Jabara's base of operations is in Carinthia province, and the governor of Carinthia is Jörg Haider. Umberto Bossi of the Liga Norte in Italy, part of the Berlusconi coalition that I alluded to earlier in this broadcast, is also very closely allied with Jörg Haider, whose xenophobic anti-immigrant arguments have sounded a resonant theme and a very sympathetic note in much of the European Union. And they also echo themes that one hears from far-right and fascist elements in the United States as well. Returning to this Chronicle article, in an interview last week, Haider insisted that provincial authorities have no power to block proceedings related to federal alien laws. He also denied media reports quoting Jabara as saying he knows Haider well. Quote, I'm vaguely familiar with the case, but I have never met that man, Jabara, and never had any contact whatever with him. I am being blamed for just about everything these days, unquote. Among those reportedly spearheading the effort to funnel aid to Iraq is Germany's National Democratic Party, which openly woos skinheads and sponsors annual protests marking the 1987 death in prison of Hitler deputy Rudolf Hess that often wind up in neo-Nazi violence. The party, which all German democratic parties seek to ban, recently proclaimed, quote, strong support for suffering Iraqis, unquote, on its internet homepage. Again quoting, the so-called Community of Nations Against Iraq is a structure held together by means of blackmail, lies, bribery, corruption, and violence by the satraps of the East Coast, the statement said, using a term far-rightist usually applied to the U.S. Jewish community. Also regularly expressing, quote, solidarity, unquote, with Hussein's regime is the Munich weekly Deutsche National Zeitung. Circulation, turning to the inside of this article, 130,000, 115,000 in Austria. Its owner is Bavarian millionaire publisher Gerhard Fry, leader of the German People's Party, DVU, a group accused of racism and anti-Semitism that won 13% of the 1998 vote in the eastern state of Saxony-Anhalt. By the way, we've spoken about Gerhard Fry in numerous broadcasts. He's an individual with more connections, as I say, than a switchboard. He was one of the major funding conduits for Vladimir Zhirinovsky's early political rise in Russia after the collapse of the Soviet Union. It was in the Deutsche National Zeitung and Soldaten Zeitung that the disinformation of Lee Harvey Oswald allegedly shot at General Edwin Walker was first published. This several days before that information supposedly first surfaced to the light of day in an interview that Marina Oswald gave to the FBI. Returning once again to this article, after discussing support for Jabara and for Saddam Hussein by Gerhard Fry, in an editorial, speaking of the Deutsche National Zeitung, in an editorial, the weekly attacked the United States for keeping Iraq in a, quote, stranglehold, unquote, and asserted that Germany spent $18.8 billion in tax money to help finance the Persian Gulf War, quote, even though Germany was in no way threatened by Baghdad, unquote. The publication also ridiculed as ludicrous horror stories, unquote, recent media reports that the German intelligence agency has new evidence that Hussein has revived his nuclear weapons production and may be capable of making an atomic bomb within the next 3 years. Openly pitching for cash for our Iraqi brothers, unquote, are leaflets issued by a shadowy organization calling itself German and Austrian Patriots, unquote. The flyer's signatories include Franz Schoenhuber, 78, the former Waffen-SS sergeant who co-founded the once surging extreme rightist Republikaner Party, and the leader of a Salzburg-based neo-Nazi group identified only as Richard R. Security officials say funds and commodities collected for Iraq on humanitarian grounds, unquote, are usually channeled to Jeanine Le Pen, the wife of Jean-Marie Le Pen, the leader of France's far-right National Front. Running a special aid organization called SCS, Children of Iraq, she then arranges for the transfer to Baghdad. The idea of helping Saddam Hussein seems to have a bizarre unifying effect on assorted extreme rightist groups, not only in Austria and Germany, but also in the rest of Europe, unquote, said the Austrian security official. Apparently, that's where Hussein's man in St. Viet comes in. That is the reference to Jabara. That reference, I should say, is to Jabara. In an impassioned plea for donations for Iraq, published recently by the Austrian far-rightist periodical Rule, Jabara was named as, or Rule, maybe that's not anglicized, the Austrian far-rightist periodical Rule, Jabara was named as, quote, coordinator for the aid action for Iraq by German patriots, unquote. Questioned about it by Austrian reporters in January, Jabara not only did not deny his role as aid coordinator, unquote, but also minced no words about his admiration for Hussein and proudly showed off a wristwatch whose dial showed a portrait of the Iraqi despot. Quote, "The Iraqi people are starving, our children are starving, and Bill Clinton, then U.S. president, is much worse than Hitler," he said. "The people helping us are just ordinary young people who finally recognize what the truth is, and besides, their ideology resembles ours," unquote. By the way, I would also note the considerable sympathy for Saddam Hussein and the Iraqi position in the American left as well. It's one of the reasons why one finds far more overlap between elements generally regarded as on the left and on the right than one might suspect. Continuing. Jabara, a former resident of Munich, was sentenced in 1986 to 6.5 years in prison for attempting to smuggle 40 combat helicopters from Germany to Iraq during the Iran-Iraq War, as well as for trying to blackmail a business partner. The verdict specifically referred to Jabara's, quote, close contacts, unquote, with high-level Iraqi government and Secret Service officials, including Hussein's top security officer and the chief of the National Procurement Agency, unquote. According to Format, Jabara also was questioned in the court in connection with the reported participation of German firms in the construction of chemical weapon plants at Iraq's heavily guarded Samarra industrial complex. The magazine said he was accused of engineering a hostage-taking plot in Iraq to force his release from prison. Jabara has vehemently denied both allegations. Jabara was prematurely released from prison for unknown reasons in the early 1990s, and his motive for moving to Austria is also unclear. But some analysts point out that before the Gulf War, Iraq was Austria's most important trading partner in the Middle East, with Austrian exports amounting to about $400 million annually. State-owned and private companies such as Voest Alpine, OMV, and ELIN, all in capitals, E-L-I-N, did large-scale business in the fields of manufactured goods, oil, and power plant construction, respectively. The Gulf War and the embargo ended the Austrian-Iraqi trade almost completely, and that's why it was with satisfaction that the easing of the sanctions in recent years was registered here, unquote, said the Vienna Daily Standard. That, again, from the San Francisco Chronicle of Thursday, May 3rd of the year 2001. And again, we've talked about Saddam Hussein and some of the fascist antecedents of Iraqi extreme nationalism. There was an anti-British pro-Axis uprising in Iraq led by Ali Rashid in 1940, I think it was. It was during World War II, and I believe off the top of my head it was 1940. One of Ali Rashid's supporters was an Iraqi army officer named Karula al-Tufah, who is the uncle of Saddam Hussein and who was Saddam Hussein's mentor, political mentor, to a large extent. Saddam Hussein, by the way, owns Hitler's personal Mercedes, which is said to be his favorite car, and there are areas of overlap between the Ba'ath Party ideology and its extreme racist racial nationalism and the Nazi Party ideology of Adolf Hitler. I'm not saying the two are identical, but there are areas of overlap in the doctrinaire militarism, the worship of war, and also the extreme racial nationalism that infect both philosophies. And again, Karula al-Tufah was the most important political influence on Saddam Hussein, and he was an admirer of Hitler and was a participant in the Ali Rashid uprising against the British in 1940. I've spoken in numerous broadcasts about what I call the Underground Reich, and it's a term that I mean quite literally, a Third Reich that went underground and has perpetuated itself in a very effective, albeit clandestine, mafia-like fashion, using a combination of extreme economic power associated with the Bormann Group, and also their connections with secret services, and the deadly and putative power of post-war SS men and other people employed either as doctrinaire operatives or as mercenary assassins. I've also noted in a number of broadcasts, most recently for the record program number 293, about the fascist heritage of independent, quote, unquote, Croatia, and also the primary role that Germany played in not only the breakup of Yugoslavia, but in the diplomatic recognition of Croatia and Slovenia, and in particular some of the military aid that was given to the newly independent Croatian state, which had been a satellite of Nazi Germany in World War II. In light of the fascist, worldwide fascist support for Saddam Hussein and apparent connections between what I call the underground Reich and the regime of Saddam Hussein in Iraq, and also connections between the underground Reich and Croatia, consider the following. Research credit on this goes to a member of a listening audience. This is a Reuters story. It's datelined April 25th of the year 2001, and it's headlined, it's titled, I should say, by Reuters, Iraq Vows to Keep Close Eye on Oil Customers. The article reads in part as follows. Again, it's datelined Dubai, and this is a Reuters story from April 25th of the year 2001. Iraq's State Oil Marketing Organization, SOMO, vowed on Wednesday to keep a close watch on all of its customers as dealings with Swiss trading firm Glencore International AG came under United Nations scrutiny. Quote, "We are monitoring our customers, and if we see anything wrong, we will ask them to rectify it," unquote, a senior Iraqi oil official told Reuters. Britain on Tuesday threatened to cut off Glencore from Iraqi crude sales unless it offered more information about its trade in Iraqi barrels. The Iraqi official said he understood the situation with the UN was resolved after Glencore, quote, corrected, unquote, its letter of credit. He declined to comment further. Glencore said that the 2 million barrels of Kirkuk crude was only going to be stored in Croatia for further shipment to the United States, according to a letter sent Tuesday to the United Nations. The company's London trading office attached a form it says shows that the oil was held outside of customs in Croatia and not to be unloaded there. Quote, "We have always seen and will continue to be totally committed to fully respecting and observing all UN regulations," unquote, said the letter from Glencore Limited. Earlier, the United Nations oil experts, the overseers, said that Glencore's claim was that it was only holding the oil, in Croatia was not credible. So here it would appear, at least from the context of this article, that Iraq was shipping oil to Croatia for the use of the Croatian authorities. Again, that does not prove anything, and it is not definitive, but it would certainly be suggestive of and illustrative of some of the commercial, political, and military connections that I have been discussing in connection with what I call the Underground Reich. And the last article that I'm going to deal with on this side of the program also deals with doings in the former Yugoslavia, in which there are not only there's not only a fascist heritage to the Croatian independent state, but also a strong fascist heritage to some of the Islamic nationalist and ethnic movements. I've noted in the past that there were a couple of Balkan Muslim Waffen SS divisions recruited by Haj Amin al-Husseini, the self-styled Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, a major in the SS, a key Third Reich intelligence operative, and himself the first leader of the Palestinian National Movement. The 13th Waffen SS or Hanjar Division and the 21st Waffen SS or Skanderbeg Division were the two Balkan Muslim Waffen SS formations that I alluded to. Those are discussed at considerable length and detail in, among other broadcasts, most recently for the record program number 293, available from Spitfire. I've noted that there's been a recent upsurging of ethnic Albanian and Muslim violence in the former Yugoslavia. Note the following. Research credit on this to a member of the listening audience. This is a UPI story dated April 23rd of the year 2001. It's by Lulzim, L-U-L-Z-I-M, Kota, headlined, UN Security Arrests Car Bomb Suspect. It's state-lined Tirana, Albania. And again, it's a UPI story from April 23rd. UN security forces in Kosovo have apprehended a suspect in connection with last week's car bombing that killed a Serb official and injured three others, a UN spokesman said Monday. UN spokesman Charlie Johnson told reporters the suspect is a German mercenary whose fingerprints were discovered near the scene of the bombing. According to Johnson, the unidentified suspect with a Russian name and German citizenship is just one member of what is believed to be a foreign terrorist network operating in the provincial capital of Pristina. We'll resume with this theme on the other side of this program. I've made allusions to broadcasts available from Spitfire, a tape and CD duplication service. They can be reached at P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, 95005. You can email them at mail, M-A-I-L, at spitfirelist.com. And you can visit the Spitfire website at www.spitfirelist.com, and there's a detailed description of this program in that website. You can also visit real audio archives that are being compiled by sister station WFMU-FM at wfmu.org/Dave Emery. There's another longer URL address. There are links to those WFMU websites in the Spitfire, on the For the Record section of the Spitfire website. This concludes Side A of For the Record program number 306, being recorded on June 16th of 2001. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening. Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is Side 2 of For the Record program number 306, titled Another Look at Global Fascism. We began by taking a look at fascist connections with various Middle Eastern nationalist movements, including some virulent propaganda currently finding its way into the Arabic press, very reminiscent of some of the most right propaganda coming out of the Goebbels propaganda ministry in World War II. We've then been traveling around the globe looking at links between Middle Eastern fascism and fascism in Europe, both older fascist movements and neo-fascist movements. And we concluded, side one by taking a look at some interesting links between the world of contemporary fascism and what used to be Yugoslavia, including the most recent article, a UPI story which examined the arrest of a German mercenary for a car bomb attack perpetrated on behalf of ethnic Albanians that killed some Serb policemen and officials. And we're going to, in this side, we're going to stay in the continent of Europe, and we're going to be taking a look at European fascism and various European fascist movements with roots going back to World War II. By the way, as I've noted in the past, Italian fascism, and time permitting, we're going to get to some of the interesting elements of the Silvio Berlusconi coalition in Italy. We're going to be, in connection with Italian fascism, it's worth noting that there is very strong and virulent sympathy for some of the most anti-Semitic and anti-Zionist elements in the Middle East, and at the same time, some elements of the Israeli right, which itself has a fascist heritage, have some operational links with elements of Italian neo-fascism. We've talked about that in a number of broadcasts dealing with global fascism and with Euro-fascism. One of the elements that we've discussed in connection not only with the Reinhard Gehlen Nazi spy outfit that began with the Third Reich and then jumped to U.S. intelligence during World War II, but also in conjunction with the, we've spoken about this organization in connection with the Gehlen organization, also in connection with the anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations, and also in conjunction with the assassination of President Kennedy, and that is the OUNV, which is a Ukrainian nationalist and fascist organization headed up by Stefan Bandera, which had strong links to the Third Reich and also to elements of Western intelligence and elements of the OUNV milieu and the anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations run through the assassination of President Kennedy. And again, these are elements which are, although Bandera himself has been dead for many years, the fascist heritage of Ukrainian nationalism is very much present. I don't want to be misunderstood as suggesting that all or even most Ukrainian nationalists are fascists, but there are very strong historical and political links, and those links are very much in evidence today. The current government of the Ukraine under Leonid Kuchma, the president, appears to be less than wholly democratic. However, I would note that the milieu that protests against Leonid Kuchma, justifiably, I would say, at least as near as one can tell from reading the English language press in this country, the elements protesting against President Kuchma are themselves less than wholly democratic, and apparently some of the Ukrainian fascist heritage of the Ukrainian nationalist movement is very much present in the protest movement against President Kuchma. We're going to read now from the San Francisco Chronicle of Saturday, March 24th of the year 2001. This is an article by Julia Barton at Stateline Kiev in the Ukraine. It's headlined, Ukraine's Embattled Democracy, subtitled, Unpopular Leader Steps Up Pressure Against Political Foes. And the article reads in part as follows, skipping down. Ukraine's eastern and southern regions were under Russian and then Soviet control for more than 300 years, and nostalgia for the former Soviet Union remains strong. Western Ukraine, much of which was forcibly annexed by the Soviet Union during World War II, retains a strong nationalistic and anti-communist streak. The divisions run so deep that Ukrainians actually fought on both sides during the war. While Kiev and eastern Ukraine still celebrate the Red Army's victory over Nazi forces on May 9th, in parts of anti-communist western Ukraine, it's a day of mourning. Skipping down, speaking of the protesters against Kuchma, about a quarter of the jailed protesters were members of the right-wing nationalist organization UNA-UNSO, which has strong roots in western Ukraine. The group first gained notoriety in the mid-1990s when it sent paramilitary troops to Chechnya to fight the Russian army. Although UNA-UNSO's leaders say they now eschew fascism, the organization's website contains a letter of support for far-right Austrian politician Jörg Haider, and UNA-UNSO members still spout the rhetoric of aggrieved nationalism. Quote, "The Ukrainian people are in the background of Ukraine," unquote, said one member, Nadia Maya, at a recent protest in Lviv. Again quoting, "In front are the Russians, Poles, and Jews. Ukrainians work for them, or they have to go abroad to earn a living, and there they have other masters," unquote, she said. The presence of groups like UNA, UNSO, and the protest movement has been a boon to Kuchma, who has exploited their extremist past to tarnish all of his opponents. In a speech on national television on February 13th, he warned of, quote, "professional revolutionaries," unquote, seeking to destabilize the country. So note again the UNA-UNSO affinity for Jörg Haider, an affinity that is shared by various elements. It is in Haider's Carinthia province that the Iraqi arms dealer Jabara holds forth, apparently serving as a conduit between European far-right and fascist elements and the Iraqi regime. And Jörg Haider, as I've mentioned in numerous broadcasts about Eurofascism, is also very close to the Liga Norda, part of the successful coalition put together by Silvio Berlusconi, a former member of the P2 Lodge. We may get to the Berlusconi victory later in this broadcast. We will certainly be covering the Berlusconi election and the coalition he has put together in future broadcasts that will be coming up soon. There's a very interesting, in discussion, by the way, the OUNB and the Anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations, we've discussed both of those organizations in conjunction with the destabilization of the former Soviet Union, and in turn we've talked about the Anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations and the milieu surrounding that in connection with the Republican Ethnic Outreach Organization. That is a very important, although largely unrecognized, wing of the Republican Party, but literally sort of an outgrowth of European fascism and the Third Reich in particular, and it has its roots firmly mired in the politics and the ideology of the Third Reich. We've dealt with the Republican Ethnic Outreach Organization in numerous broadcasts, and those are available from Spitfire. There was something of an echo of the Republican Ethnic Outreach Organization, and also the efforts on the part of the Republican Party in the late 80s and early 90s to reach out to and form alliances with extreme nationalist and ultra-rightist movements, some of them explicitly fascist, in the newly liberated parts of Eastern Europe. I've also noted in the past, in connection with the Anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations, that one of the organizations that was very much involved with that was the Arrow Cross organization. That was the fascist organization in Hungary during World War II, Hungary being an ally of Nazi Germany during the Second World War. I've also noted, in connection with other broadcasts about the reemergence of fascism in Europe, that Hungary has been one of the countries where European neo-fascism has made itself felt, and now apparently some of those neo-fascist and anti-Semitic elements in Hungary are becoming, or at least are aiming in the direction of becoming, part of a major governmental coalition. We're going to read now from the San Francisco Chronicle of Saturday, May 5th of the year 2001. This is an article by Sam Loewenberg of the Chronicle Foreign Service. It's datelined Budapest, Hungary, and its headline, "Hungary's Ruling Party Courting Extreme Right-Wing Faction," subtitled, "Goal is to Isolate Socialist Opponents in 2002 Election." The article reads as follows. Hungary's ruling party ascended to power in 1998 by learning from and adopting the sophisticated methods of U.S. political parties, tailoring its platform to the polls and co-opting the policies of its rivals. But the strategy has recently taken a dangerous twist, with the ruling Federation of Young Democrats, Hungarian Civic Party, increasingly embracing an extreme right party that espouses nationalism and anti-Semitism. With an election scheduled for 2002, many observers believe that the Fidesz is seeking to turn Hungary's multi-party parliamentary democracy into a two-party system by consolidating the entire right wing of the political spectrum. The goal is to isolate on the left wing the Fidesz's Socialist Party arch-rivals. The two are currently running about even in opinion polls, each favored by about one-fourth of the electorate. Recent scandals involving the Fidesz's current coalition partner, the Smallholders, have led many to think that the party will try to absorb the membership of the Hungarian Truth and Life Party, or MIEP, an ultranationalist, anti-Semitic movement whose percentage of voter support, while still small, is showing signs of moving into the double digits. Hungarian newspapers have quoted Fidesz President Laszlo Kovár as saying there are many similarities between his party's beliefs and those of the MIEP, and the two parties acknowledge that they have held talks with each other. Kovár has said the two will not enter into a formal coalition because the European Union would frown on it. Hungary's admission to the EU is high on the Fidesz's priority list. A March 15th MIEP rally in Budapest drew a turnout that surprised many observers, not only for its numbers, which the Associated Press put as high as 50,000, but for its composition, a mix of old pensioners who remember Hungary's pre-communist past, young urban students and professionals, and dozens of skinheads, some of them wearing neo-Nazi insignia. The Fidesz's courting of some of Hungary's most extreme and intolerant elements is a clear case of political opportunism, said liberal commentator Miklós Harasti, who calls the Fidesz, quote, the party of marketing, unquote. Today's Fidesz bears little resemblance to the Young Democrats' beginnings in the 1980s as liberal jean-jacketed students resisting Hungary's communist rulers. Over the course of the past decade, it traded in its liberal ideals for a carefully charted rightward course that has former supporters scornfully referring to it as an unholy union of nationalists and, quote, yuppies from hell, unquote. Prime Minister Viktor Orban, in particular, is often cited by critics as a cunning pragmatist. The Young Democrats' journey to the right has been influenced by their contacts with the U.S. Republican Party. As recently as the end of last year, former Reagan and Bush administration officials were traveling to Budapest to advise Fidesz leaders on political strategy. These last two sentences again. The Young Democrats' journey to the right has been influenced by their contacts with the U.S. Republican Party. As recently as the end of last year, former Reagan and Bush administration officials were traveling to Budapest to advise Fidesz leaders on political strategy. And again, in the background of that, not only the Republican Ethnic Outreach Organization, but also the Free Congress Foundation, founded by Paul Weyrich, Laszlo Pásztor, a Hungarian fascist and associate of the Arrow Cross, being one of the principal operatives both with the Republican Ethnic Outreach Organization and Paul Weyrich's Free Congress Foundation, an organization deeply involved in the destabilization of the Soviet Union in Eastern Europe, and the focal point of RFA 36 and also discussed in 37. Continuing with this article, speaking of the Fidesz, after talking about their links with the with former Reagan and Bush administration officials, those leaders see opportunity in the MIEP's growing appeal, which is fostered by the economic hardship many Hungarians face after the collapse of former Soviet bloc markets. The transition to capitalism has left everyone from pensioners to middle-income families struggling after losing long-held social benefits. The inflation rate is almost 10%, and only last year did the standard of living regain 1990 levels. For the MIEP, the new boogeyman is globalization, a peculiar mix of fears of the European Union, a comeback by communists, and domination by international Jewish capital. Those sentiments are an obstacle to cooperation with the Fidesz. They and the socialists desperately want Hungary to be admitted to the EU as soon as possible. Nonetheless, the Fidesz, and turning to it inside, continues to edge closer to the MIEP in rhetoric. Fidesz parliamentary deputy Mihály Balak, B-A-L-L-A, declared recently, quote, In Hungary, the Christian religion is very important, unquote. He also asserted that, quote, there is no racism and no anti-Semitism there, a claim not supported by international observers. The U.S. State Department's most recent human rights report cited many cases of discrimination against Roma or gypsies, including residential and educational segregation and police brutality. Quote, the Romani minority community and dark-skinned foreigners are the most common victims of police abuse, unquote, according to the report released in February. Again quoting, societal discrimination against Roma remains a serious problem, unquote. Orban himself has made remarks that seemingly reflect such bias, criticizing Roma for trashing their own homes and warning that their success in society depends on hard work and education, thereby implying that gypsies do not value those virtues. By the way, gypsies were among the minorities that were targeted for and to a certain extent liquidated by the Third Reich, and they remain one of the major targets of European neo-fascist movements as well. Continuing. The European Union's Human Rights Committee cited, quote, latent anti-Semitism, unquote, in elements of the Hungarian media, the government, and in society in general. The MIEP, for example, is trying to rehabilitate the image of World War II Prime Minister Laszlo Bardossi, who was executed in 1946 for his role in the deaths of hundreds of thousands of Jews. Quote, Hungary is for Hungarians, unquote. Throngs of MIEP supporters chanted at the March 15th rally held in Heroes Square, one of the primary centers for Hungary's democracy movement in 1989. The key speaker was MIEP founder István Szurka, a playwright with the build of a retired wrestler who has spoken about a New York, Tel Aviv, Budapest conspiracy that threatens, quote, real Magyar interests, unquote. Szurka avoided overt anti-Semitic rhetoric at the rally, instead warning the crowd about the threat of global capital, saying it put Hungarians in the same position as Palestinians, quote, when the Jewish settlers arrived, unquote. We'll be reduced to becoming stone-throwing Palestinian youths, unquote, he told his supporters. We have no problems with Jews. The only problem is their big-time money. The money goes to them, and we have nothing, unquote, said 21-year-old college student Gabor Fotanyi. Idiko Lang, L-A-N-G, a 26-year-old woman from Budapest, described another political party, the Free Democrats, as a, quote, Jewish, unquote, party. Again quoting, MIEP is against Israel and the Free Democrats, unquote, she said. Another young woman, who declined to give her name, said Hungary was being overrun by foreigners, quote, in Hungary, I don't feel myself to be Hungarian, unquote. Given Hungary's long history of anti-Semitism and nationalism, for Fidesz leaders not to openly condemn the MIEP's rhetoric is nearly the same as endorsing it, said a Hungarian political analyst. What Fidesz leaders say, quote, doesn't matter as much as what they don't say, unquote, he said. Again quoting, it gives voice to the prejudice of the people that has been here for centuries and centuries. Unquote. Notice that there's no direct reference, there's only one reference in that article to Hungary's fascist heritage in World War II. And again, note some of the similarities between European neo-fascist movements and also fascist movements in the United States and their sympathy for the Palestinian cause, really at root simply anti-Semitism, since these groups tend to be almost as virulently anti-Arab as they are anti-Israeli. And in fact, in many European countries, France in particular, immigrants from the Middle East are viewed as one of the major threats to society and are a frequent target not only of fascist rhetoric but of fascist violence as well. There has been an interesting development in Belgium, which is scheduled to assume the rotating presidency of the EU. Two Belgian governmental officials, Flemish officials, by the way, Belgium is composed of two main nationalist groups or ethnic groups, the Flemish and the Walloons. The Flemish have an affiliation with French heritage and the Walloons with Dutch. During World War II, France was one of a number of countries that sent volunteers to the Waffen-SS, and one of the generals of one of the Waffen-SS divisions that fought on the Eastern Front in World War II, Léon de Grelle, became a key post-war operative of the Odessa, the post-World War II SS underground. He was a strong associate, a very close associate of Otto Skorzeny, and discussed, by the way, at considerable length in RFA number 19. Recently, there have been two stories in which, or two instances in which, Flemish politicians have been found to have links, and I may be mispronouncing that, to the Sint Maarten's Fonds, which was founded in 1953 in order to assist Belgian volunteers who fought in the Waffen-SS on the Eastern Front in World War II. This research credit on all three of these goes to members of the listening audience. The first is from the London Independent of May 10th of the year 2001. This is an article by Stephen Castle in Brussels, dateline May 10th, 2001. It's headlined, Flemish Interior Minister Refuses to Quit Over Membership of SS Group. And again, this is by Stephen Castle. The article reads in part, Belgium's wartime past returned to haunt its politics yesterday when a minister in the Flemish regional government provoked a political furor by admitting his membership of a support group for Nazi SS veterans. The row reopened sores by highlighting the legacy of Flemish collaboration during the Second World War. It also threatened the stability of the national coalition government. The Flemish Interior Minister, Johan Sauwens, S-A-U-W-E-N-S, yesterday apologized for attending a meeting last Saturday of the Sint Maarten's Fonds, a support group for SS veterans of which he has been a member for 25 years. But despite massive political pressure and growing support for a vote of no confidence in the minister, Mr. Sauwens did not offer to resign. The Sint Maarten's Fonds was founded in 1953 to help Belgians who volunteered to join Waffen-SS units on the Russian front. After the war, collaborators were jailed or stripped of many of their rights and with little opportunity for employment. Still more about Sauwens. Research credit on this also goes to a member of the listening audience. This comes from the BBC News. This is also datelined May 10th. Of the year 2001, and this is from the BBC News website at news.bbc.co.uk. This is headlined, Flemish Minister Quits Over SS Links. It reads in part as follows, skipping down, about Mr. Sauwens' attendance at the St. Martin's Fonds rally. Photos and video footage of Saturday's meeting showed Mr. Sauwens participating in festivities of far-right sympathizers. Johan Sauwens is seen to stand up as the uniformed participants sing the anthem of the Flemish SS Brigade during World War II, including a call to arms. And Johan Sauwens is not the only Flemish government official who has been found to have links to the Sint Maarten's Fonds. Research credit on the following also goes to a member of the listening audience. This also is from the London Independent, and this also was authored by Stephen Castle in Brussels. This, however, is dated May 18th of the year 2001. It's headlined, Second Belgian Minister Linked to SS Veterans, and it reads in part as follows. A row over wartime collaboration threatened to claim a second political scalp and plunged the Belgian government into crisis yesterday when a cabinet minister admitted past links with a support group for SS veterans. Jacques Gabriels, J-A-A-K-G-A-B-R-I-E-L-S, Belgium's Minister of Agriculture and member of the Prime Minister's Flemish Liberal Party, faced hostile questions from the media and MPs as he sought to explain away a growing political embarrassment. Just 1 week ago, a minister in the Flemish regional government was forced to quit after being seen at a meeting of an SS veteran support group attended by followers of the far right. Skipping down. The row centers on the activities of the Sint Maarten's Fonds, a group set up in the early 1950s to help returning collaborators and their families. 10 days ago, the interior minister of the Flemish regional government, Johan Sauwens, was filmed at a meeting by political rivals from the far right of Vlaamsbak. The footage, shown gleefully to selected journalists, was shot from behind and revealed the Flemish minister seated at the back of a hall with Nazi symbols in silhouette. Skipping down. Having at first denied membership of the Sint Maarten's Fonds, the minister qualified his answer, this referring to Gabriel's, admitting contacts many years ago. Yesterday, Le Soir, the Brussels Daily, reported that Mr. Gabriel's office had confirmed that the minister was a member of the group 20 years ago, but could not remember whether he remains one. I would add, parenthetically, take that lack of remembrance with a grain of salt. He said he was a member of the group 20 years ago, but couldn't remember whether he remained a member of the support group for the Flemish Waffen-SS divisions. Skipping down. That was denied by his spokeswoman, who said that Mr. Gabriels had simply bought raffle tickets sold in support of the group, skipping down again. Mr. Sowens represented the Folks You Need Party, a nationalist Flemish group which eschews the strident nationalism of the extreme Vlaams bloc, but has murky roots. Mr. Gabriels was a president of the Folks You Need before defecting to the Liberal Party of the Prime Minister, Guy Verhofstadt. When it was founded after the war, one of the Folks You Need's demands was an amnesty for collaborators. The rationale was that many Flemish people cooperated with the Germans because they saw it as a route to separatism and freedom from oppression by Belgium's French-speaking elite rather than an embracing of Nazi ideology. Some dispute that interpretation, and a book published last year highlights how much cooperation the Germans found for their Jewish extermination policy in Antwerp. Excuse me, the Walloons, I believe. The Walloons were associated with the French, and it is the Flemish that were associated with the Dutch. At least that's my understanding. Anyway, those are the two major ethnic groups in Belgium. It is the Flemish nationalist movement that had some strong ties here to the Waffen-SS, or at least those ties have emerged here. Resuming again and repeating the last couple of sentences, the rationale was that many Flemish people cooperated with the Germans because they saw it as a route to separatism and freedom from oppression by Belgium's French-speaking elite rather than an embracing of Nazi ideology. Some dispute that interpretation, and a book published last year highlights how much cooperation the Germans found for their Jewish extermination policy in Antwerp. Today, the port city is a stronghold of the far right. The row has sparked an examination of Belgium's wartime legacy and raised more questions about the strength of the modern far right. And indeed, note that two Belgian government officials have now emerged with links to the support organization for the Flemish Waffen-SS division of World War II. In several For the Record broadcasts, we've dealt with Eric Priebke, the SS officer who was convicted of participating in massacres in post-World War II, wartime Italy. In some of those broadcasts, I've dealt with Priebke's connections to the post-World War II Odessa Underground, and also, apparently, Priebke's and associates' connections to elements of Western intelligence as well. Priebke has very strong connections to the Italian neo-fascist milieu that has emerged in once again as part of the governing coalition of Silvio Berlusconi.
And you're listening to WFMU East Orange, WXHD Mount Hope, WFMU.org. This is a rebroadcast of a program from July of 2000 on the Green Room.